Bush Dhaka is good for your health.
It's Decolonize Your Diet with Delani and Caillou Bales.
So eat em, Bush Dhaka. Eat em every day.
Decolonize Your Diet, a show that will change the way you think about hunting, gathering, and Bush Dhaka in general.
Bush Dhaka is good for your health.
And here's your hosts, Delani and Caillou Bales.
Honey.
Thank you for joining us for our series, Decolonize Your Diet. Inspired by the late Tiger Bales of 98.9 FM Brisbane and produced by his daughter and grandson, mother and son team, Caillou and Tiger Bales. In this series, we'll look at what the country looked like at the time of invasion, the changes to land, animals, health and well-being, the many benefits of eating bush food, the problems with the current guidelines and model of health, solutions and recommendations to help turn things around, and caught up with those leading the way in the push to return traditional approaches to well-being. We hope you have enjoyed the series so far. If you have missed it, check out our website to listen to the podcast. Today, we catch up with the series creator, Caillou Bales. Welcome, Caillou, Mum, series producer and presenter. For Mum listening at home, could you please tell us your mob and your country?
Thank you, son. Yeah, our mob is the Wanneroo mob from Hunter Valley, the Wiri mob, Northern Queensland. So I got connections to Rainbow Valley, and we also connected to the Gungaloo people of just northwest of Rockhampton Way. So, yeah, that's my mob. I grew up in Sydney, Redfern, Black Heart of Sydney. Spent a little bit of time down in Hastings Point, but most of my time has been spent here in Brisbane. I now live on Stradbroke Island. My children, Noonuckle children here, bloodline country connection.
What inspired you to start working on the series Decolonize Your Diet?
My late father, also a broadcaster, he spoke to me about the need for this project called Decolonize Your Diet. And I think he just wanted to make sure that we were sharing important knowledge about bush tucker and its benefits. He could see the damage that Western diet was doing, and we often talked about it at home. Mum was a naturopath back in the 80s, and we grew up eating brown bread and rice, goat's milk, honey, not sugar.
You interviewed a lot of standouts for the series. With all the revelations, what stuck with you the most?
The things that stuck out to me the most, why was it being kept from us for so long? Why were the benefits and the difference in our physical condition before invasion? The thing that really shocked me, and it shouldn't, because it should be common knowledge, especially with Mum being a naturopath, and even, you know, after Mum passed away in 2001, Dad always continued to seek out the best information on health, and, you know, his friends were always in the know. So for me to find out, you know, in my late 30s, that diet was the biggest killer globally, above guns, above violence, above cars and sides. We don't understand that from a young age, you know, how we got any chance of being healthy, let alone breaking cycles and closing the gap. I had no idea at all that sugar was hidden in everything, you know, from rice to pasta sauces and just jam-packed in things that you couldn't even, you know, you wouldn't even imagine. It really hurt me to find out the actual statistics. Things like, you know, mob going from eating 90% bush tucker in the early days of invasion to around 5% today. Some communities are consuming 100 kilo of sugar a week with population of only 100, like Damon Gemmo pointed out, or 40,000 litres of soft drinks annually in a town of 400. That sort of stuff, you know, that was mind-blowing. I didn't understand the extent of the issues that we're facing as a people, as a nation. And when you learn that someone dies every 6 seconds from type 2 diabetes, a condition caused by poor diet, totally preventable, that 1 in 4 Aussie kids are overweight or obese, or that 1 serve of tomato soup has 7 teaspoons of sugar, and not many of us know that there's that much sugar in there as a can of Coke. There's, you know, this is something perceived to be somewhat of a healthy choice. I had no idea. The oldest nutritious food on earth was here in this country. I've been, you know, harping on about goji berries and spirulina, chia seeds, and, you know, I didn't even realise that I've been overlooking my own traditional diet and the benefits, and that we had the oldest, most nutritious food on earth, you know, thanks to the writings of John Newton. You know, I didn't understand that the issues from a expert's point of view were as serious and as dire as Greg Jeffries pointed out. The Aboriginal model of health is nothing but a Western framework that's forcing us into that. You know, it's no different. That's not just failing Aboriginal people, that's failing white fellas too. So it left me wondering, you know, why have we ignored the importance of eating a traditional diet when we're dying way too young as a community, you know, nationally? And if we can turn things around in just 7 weeks, why hasn't the benefits been shared? Why aren't they being practiced? You know, why aren't they being made compulsory in our health centres? That's a big thing at the end of the series, I'm still left wondering. And I realise that there's an importance for the role of black media producers to keep up the research findings so we can share with community members and even campaign for policy change.
Before invasion, were we some of the healthiest people on earth?
Early reports from physicians claimed those consuming market food had poor health. Individuals consuming traditional diets were in superb health. Yeah, while I was researching for the series, I came across a movie called The Perfect Human Diet. In the movie, a group of nutritional scientists travelled the globe to find the perfect human diet. They found the work of Dr. Kieran O'Day, and after 7 weeks of eating bush tucker, a bunch of black fellas who used to live in the city and returned to the bush for this experiment, and after only 7 weeks of eating bush tucker, they reversed diabetes, obesity, heart disease, and they weren't very active. They were doing minimal tasks just to go and get their food each day. So the potential is still there today to get back to superb health and to get back to thriving.
How has this changed your life?
It's had a big, big impact on my life, something that I didn't see ever happening, something that's, you know, it's fairly overwhelming because it's changed me in a big way. It's my whole lifestyle's changed now to the point where I've been juicing for the last 5 or 6 months every day. I visit the local markets and buy 5 or 6 boxes of fruit and vegetables each day, so I'm not eating, you know, the food that's in the boxes and the processed stuff packed with sugar and salt. I'm teaching the children about sugar and getting them to understand in terms of teaspoons, you know, what's in, how many teaspoons is in a slushy, and how many teaspoons is in anything that they have, teaspoons of sugar is in anything that they're eating. I've also, you know, made huge, huge changes and brought in people that are really, really positive and inspire positive change in fitness and well-being and transformation. We've started a group here on Stradbroke Island where we work out twice a day on Monday, Wednesday and Friday, 6:30 in the morning and 4:30 in the afternoon. And we also do a walking session on Tuesday night and Thursday nights at 7 o'clock. With the whole family, my 5 sons and I, we're really getting into fitness. We're making sure that we're juicing at home. We're making sure that we eat, you know, we're trying to eat 30% bush tucker to try, you know, just to get more bush tucker on the table again. And my plan is to, you know, have these kids in community, not just my kids, but all kids, you know, going out to eat a fresh variety and range of bush tucker that in the morning instead of going to the cupboard and getting cereal. You know, they can go out and grab their bowl and pick an assortment of bush tucker that's going to be packed with nutrition instead of being overfed and undernourished, as we've talked about. Some of the things I've learnt along the way that I would like to share with others is, it's very important if you're wondering where to start, it's important to understand where your food comes from. There's like the movies and books that Dad used to share with me, like Hungry for Change, these books, you know, and Tyler Tolman, if you can get onto those guys and have a look at the stuff that they're teaching. Basically, learn where your food's coming from. Other movies like Cowspiracy are good for that. What the Health, Fat, Sick and Nearly Dead is another good Australian movie. of course, that sugar film and The Perfect Human Diet, which we've mentioned, and the book by John Newton called The Oldest Foods on Earth. And check out the recipes in there if you want to learn how to incorporate more bush tucker in your food. I think it's really important to understand how sugar can control your mood. And a lot of us don't even go a day without sugar. So we're not aware of the negative effects that sugar has on the brain. I'd suggest downloading that sugar app to help calculating the amount of teaspoons in products in the supermarket. And make sure you teach the kids, you know, that the World Health Organization is aiming to reduce the daily sugar intake to 5%. The Maiwiru Foundation that Damon Gemmo helped to set up is aiming to reduce daily sugar intake to 5%, which is recommended by the WHO. And Clinton Bussey suggests aiming to increase bush food in diets by 30% to start with and build from there. You know, we've also got to be aware of cutting our portion sizes, spread our meals out, similar to how we used to eat traditionally. We've got to make sure that we're active, you know. We can't be sitting around expecting not to get sick when we're not even moving much. But, I think that just in closing, I think it's important just to share that, you know, we're eating 30 to 40 teaspoons of sugar hidden in our food each day. And the WHO recommends 3 teaspoons of sugar each day for kids under 8, 4 teaspoons of added sugar a day for older kids, and 6 teaspoons for adults. The best way to cut out sugar is to avoid sugary drinks and find healthy sweet alternatives like fruit smoothies and sugar-free coconut crisps. So we've really got to, I think as a people, we've got to make a stand, I think, against sugar. That would be my final message. And, you know, to make a stand to return back to what works for us. All of the latest evidence-based research shows and has done for the last 40 years, as we can see here, it shows, you know, that we had superior health, that bush tucker can clearly reverse a lot of the ailments and disease, prevent an early death, you know, that comes by eating Western diet. You know, I think that we need to have a look at sustainable food security plans and projects in community. It'd be good to see blackfellas too taking the rightful place here in providing an ethical supply to the rest of the world, share the benefits, the oldest foods on earth. I came across some really interesting research, some from Brand, Miller and Holt, 1998, presented evidence that traditional plant-based materials have a nutrient composition that is protective against diseases like diabetes, obesity and cardiovascular disease. Fruits, roots, tubers, nuts, seeds, leaves and flowers were analysed by 3 major scientific centres. 800 traditional bush food samples had been collected over 2 decades. The benefits of traditional bush foods were due to low total fat intake and an almost vegetarian daily diet observed over 5 months. On closer examination, the First Nations participants observed had a restricted diet, mainly due to drought, and existed in sparsely resourced and harsh environment. Gould described the physical environment as the most unreliable and impoverished in the world. Grass seeds made up the bulk of the diet, and modern standards, many of the First Nation people may have been malnourished. Traditional foods, especially meat, such as dugong fat, are essentially energy dense, and there would be concerns if large quantities were consumed regularly. Traditional food diets correlated positively with higher intakes of iron, zinc, and potassium. Market food diets correlated positively with sodium, total fat, saturated fat, sugar, and absolute energy intake. The authors concluded that poor nutritional status as a consequence of a deficient intake of traditional foods could be counteracted by education and access to good quality market foods. It was also demonstrated that traditional foods are a good source of vitamins A, D and E. Altman 2007 illustrates the developmental problems in remote Aboriginal communities of Australia. Altman gives evidence to propose that Aboriginal economic and cultural development can be achieved, even in the most remote regions of Australia. Altman suggests that geographically dispersed Aboriginal communities throughout Australia must become commercially, economically and culturally viable to improve the health and well-being of individuals. The absence of commercial opportunity has been dissolved by mainstreaming Aboriginal people that are unique and diverse. Altman states that there is a limited market opportunity, especially in remote and very remote regions, and there is a reliance on welfare payouts and the poverty traps. Altman believes there are exceptional opportunities for Aboriginal people to create their own hybrid economies within their region and support their traditional cultures. Enterprises that can be explored can include art, craft and other artifact trade, hunting and fishing and land and wildlife management and customary land exploration
expeditions and wildlife adventure treks. Climate change is a national concern, as is water quality and management. Altman 2002. Aboriginal people can develop and assist in land and water management practices, improving food security through the protection and management of traditional foods. Aboriginal people are living on some of the most biodiverse land in Australia, and Aboriginal people themselves have the potential to create unique opportunities towards greater self-determination. Food sovereignty is the right of the peoples to healthy and culturally appropriate food produced through ecologically sound and sustainable methods, and their right to define their own food and agricultural systems.
Where to from now, Dr. Nori Brown? Professor Elizabeth Elliott gave an example of the benefits she had witnessed when traditional medicine was closely integrated with Western medicine, providing the Fitzroy Valley as an example. Nilindagari Cultural Health Service doesn't specifically deliver health services, but it brokers them between health professionals and community. One of its aims is to promote the integration of Aboriginal culture into Western medicine. Nilindagari provides the principle two ways, two windows, acknowledging the benefits of combining Western and traditional medicine. Both of what Nilindagari do is educate any health professional that comes to work in the valley on the culture of the valley. The outcome is an effective collaboration. My final message has to be, if Western food is the killer, we need to return to traditional food. Like the old saying, let food be thy medicine. Prior to European arrival in Australia, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples were healthy people who survived on a traditional diet rich in nutrients and low in energy density. The dispossession of land and disruption to family structures through death, disease, forced resettlement and the removal of children since European arrival has severely affected the retention of knowledge, access to and use of traditional foods. Despite the devastating impact of colonisation and continued limitations around Australian traditional food hunting and collection, traditional foods remain an important part of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people's lives today. Traditional foods not only contribute to physical health, but play a significant role towards cultural, spiritual and emotional health. The DAA and the PHAA affirm food security exists when all people at all times have physical and economic access to sufficient, safe and nutritious food to meet their dietary needs and food preferences for an active and healthy lifestyle. The Universal Declaration of Human Rights states everyone has the right to a standard of living adequate for the health and well-being of himself and of his family, including food. The right to adequate food is not a right to be fed, but a right of the people to be given a fair opportunity to feed themselves, now and in the future. So I ask why? Why are we experiencing a lack of traditional food in our homes? Why are we not realising the effects of Western diet and returning back to what clearly worked for us? We're asking you listeners to think about that. We're going to leave you with that question. And we really do hope that people can start to return back to what works for us, our own ways, our old ways. Bush Tucker.
Bill Gowman says at the end of his book, he says of us Europeans, we have a continent to learn. If we are to survive, let alone feel at home, we must begin to understand our country. If we succeed one day, we might become Australian.
Couldn't agree more.
You know, one way of achieving this, as you've said, we may sit down as brothers and sisters and share a meal.
It does go a lot further than food. It's way bigger than just food. And here Dad talks about the importance of learning the true history. That's where it really begins.
I often say to people, if we're to close the gap, really, we, all people that call this place home, First Nations people included, must learn the true history of the place they call home, the true history of this country. If we know the true history of this country, we can close that gap of ignorance. People will develop a better understanding, about better, more awareness, a better understanding. With that understanding comes respect. If the respect is there, we're on the pathway to a more harmonious coexistence. No question about it. Learn the true history of our country, all of us. But I think, to use an old cliche, an old saying of Malcolm X, be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem. Too many of our people are a part of the problem simply by not recognising the power we have as First Nations people. The power we have is in our culture, it's in our identity. And we can reinforce that with this media, if we're in control of our media. We assert that, take that power, and encourage all of our mob to continue on in developing their a stronger identity and stronger culture. That's where our power is.
The thing is, there's another thing in the middle here. It's not just that all we have to do is get the facts of what works and tell everyone. If it were that simple, we would have fixed obesity by now. But what's in the way is the companies wanting to make money. See, I work here at this Heart and Diabetes Institute, and full of really good, deadly people doing all this work in blood sugar level research and all this sort of stuff and public health research. But for me, it's a bit frustrating because I think the answer, what we should be focusing on as well, is which food and drug companies are donating to which political parties.
Yeah.
See, that's the issue. That's why we don't have a sugar tax or why we don't have bans on junk foods. Everybody knows, the evidence is there that junk food and sugar and soft drink cause diabetes. It's all there. The evidence is there. It's like smoking. The evidence was there that smoking caused cancer. But the tobacco industry fought tooth and nail to stop that evidence getting translated into government action. They fought tooth and nail. And it took 20 years for the public health people to convince governments, no, you can't get out of this. So we're just at the start of that journey now with sugar.
Yeah.
It shouldn't take that long, but what we're up against, what researchers and people who care about health and well-being are up against, is companies who are greedy and will fight tooth and nail to get their money at any cost, and they will buy off politicians any way they can. Food and drug companies and pharmaceutical companies who make money off our sickness, they will fight tooth and nail to allow sugar to stay in our diet.
Yeah, yeah.
What we have to do as, people just at home, mum and dad, is we have to educate ourselves on all of this, go back to our traditional diets and have a look at the sugar in everything. We're not going to stop ourselves, changing our diet overnight, but we have to have a go and we have to heal ourselves, and we have to not believe everything that we are told by these big companies.
Big thanks to Mom. This was a deadly experience, and like you, I'm just grateful Pop gave us a project as important as this to do. It's important that we carry on the work he did. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Decolonize Your Diet. Stay tuned for our last installment of the series. Thank you for your company so far.
No, thank you very much. You've been deadly, the whole thing. Thank you, son.
I'd just like to thank Uncle Bruce Pascoe, Bill Gamage, John Newton, Professor Karen O'Day, Clint Bussey, Aunty Thelma Busby, Gregory Phillips, Damon Gemmo, Mike and Gail Quamby, my father for coming up with the idea, of course, and I'd really like to say thank you to my son, Tiger. Without you and Dad, the big Tiger and little Tiger, none of this would be possible. And thank you to Brisbane Indigenous Media Association and 98.9 FM.
Wish Tiger is good for your health.
Thank you for joining us this week for Decolonize Your Diet, brought to you by mother and son team Tiger and Caillou Bales. Be sure to join us again next week, same time, same place. To listen to this episode again, visit our website at 989fm.com.au.
Decolonize Your Diet, a show that will change the way you think about hunting, gathering, and bush tucker in general.
Mongaris, honey.